Abigail's thinking about dying, and after a go on the fantastic machine, the Book of Clarence is telling us that we could never go vegan. I'm Van Connor.
And I'm Adam Ball, and this is Off Screen, your 7-day guide to everything movies.
Boom.
Hello and welcome back to Off Screen. We have a plethora of brand new movies to talk about this week that Van has already seen. We're going to look at Abigail. We're going to look at I Could Never Go Vegan, which I think is just a brilliant title for a movie. No, I couldn't. I absolutely couldn't. But we're going to start with another movie that's actually got quite an interesting title. Sometimes I Think About Dying. Now, this isn't a documentary, is it?
No. No, it's not a documentary about like assisted suicide, if that's what you're getting at. Like,
yeah.
Swiss set documentary about yeah. No, this is new indie dramedy, I would say, from writer director Rachel Lambert, who really is kind of known for this kind of thing in that anyone really knows her. She's not exactly a household name. She has had a few kind of mentions on the festival scene here and there, but they do tend to be the sort of very twee indie style dramedy. This stars Daisy Ridley of, you know, the Star Wars sequel trilogy. Like, she's Rey.
Yes!
Yeah,
Daisy, I know now, yes.
Who you just don't really see in other things. Like, she's had stars, but she doesn't really appear in other things as yet. The star's not really been made. She is Fran. Fran is a 20-something sort of office drone type, but she's also a complete oddball. She keeps to herself. She's really isolationist. And then one day she gets a new coworker who in and of himself is kind of socially awkward, but in a sort of different, more outgoing way. And they form this unlikely kind of chemistry that evolves into a friendship and with the possibility of something deeper and more like an intimate relationship. And it is about how this starts to form her, cause her world to sort of crumble inwards, but also how she's so resolute that she just can't have it any other way. Have a listen to this clip. This is Daisy Ridley bringing the orcs in Sometimes I Think About Dying.
Remember the we call us our coffee. That espresso.
You're funny.
Do you have plans tonight?
So did you like the movie?
I didn't really like anything about the movie.
What do you like?
My job.
What about it?
I'm good at it.
Remember. Tell me something about you.
Got divorced. I guess I can't seem to figure it out.
Figure one out?
Love. Considering if one shouldn't die or if one should. You're secretly good at a lot of things. You just don't let anyone know. And I.
Do you think this is the kind of movie that would make any outcasts of life, including myself here, because I took a briefcase to school, feel better about themselves?
I could, you know, I could see that. It's one of those, I love a good, you know, slightly left of field, oddball indie dramedy. That's my kind of thing. One of my fave movies of all time is The Skeleton Twins with Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig, which is about a pair of siblings who themselves are kind of self-imposed outcasts. But I found a lot more relatability in something like that than I did this. This feels really functional at times. There's a lot of charm going for it. The essential performances from Daisy Ridley and I'm going to have to check his name. It's Dave Mukherjee as Robert, the co-worker. The chemistry there is really palpable, and they are kind of twee and charming and yeah, engaging as characters. But the more it goes on, the more this sort of feels like a AI-generated pastiche of itself in a way. Like, give me a boilerplate insert film type here, and this is kind of what you'd get. Like, it's very sub other things. And, like, I think immediately, like, The Skeleton Twins and even things like Garden State to a degree. And it's obvious that there are these influences lifted wholesale here, there, and everywhere. But, you know, this is it's kind of the sum of its parts and nothing more. But those parts are really good, like I say. Tight direction as well, and a wonderful sense of visualization for the fantasy side of Daisy Ridley's character, like, you know, envisioning, like, massive, like, world-ending events and things like that. It works quite well. It's a distinct-looking film, and it has a really sort of quirky animated sensibility to it, but really kind of a macabre, almost Tim Burton tinged animated sensibility. I really liked it.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because obviously I always have the trailers on loop kind of while we're chatting, actually, and I thought it, that from what I could see, I couldn't hear anything, but from what I could see, it had that sort of Tim Burton-esque look about it, 100%. Yeah.
Like, if you'd made this like 20 years ago, 9 times out of 10, it would have starred Christina Ricci, like that kind of a version of this film. Like, you can absolutely see it existing. And it is somewhat sort of removed from time, in a sense, as well. Like, it is a sort of, it feels like it could have taken place at any time in the past 30s. It's one of those wonderfully disembodied films. You know, like, in a sense, like, we used to get a lot in the heyday of, like, Tarantino era in the 90s, where really that could have been set in any Tarantino movie, for instance, could be set in any decade. This has that otherworldly embodiment where it could be any decade. It could just as easily be now as it is, you know, 1995, for instance. But I say, I really liked it. It's not a crowd pleaser. And it's a little bit too functional for its own good, but I did like it. It did charm me and win me over, even though I came away thinking, this is the, you know, conveyor line assembled version of this, like, far and away.
You haven't mentioned its length yet, and that's normally a bad sign with you, because that normally means it was too long. So I'm assuming you weren't watching your watch throughout this.
No, this was, I think this was a tight time. This is like 90 minutes plus credits,
which perfect. Is
about, yeah, the perfect amount of time for a movie like this, lest it sort of, you know, overstay its welcome. I'm looking at you like Driveway Dolls, which I think was shorter than this and somehow felt twice as long. But you know what I mean? Like, one of those, like, you're right, this had a good runtime and absolutely paced perfectly for the time that you spend with these characters, I think. But like I say, you're just not particularly going to see anything new, save for, you know, Daisy Ridley's not bad at this kind of thing. I'd watch more of this.
Well, it's out in cinemas from today. Sometimes I Think About Dying. All right, we got two movies to talk about next. Fantastic Machine and I Could Never Go Vegan. We'll see what Van thought in just a second. Stay there. Hello and welcome back to Off Screen. Let's dive deep into our next two movies. So we're going to talk about Fantastic Machine, which is out in cinemas from today in a minute. But let's first talk about I Could Never Go Vegan. So this, from what I can make out, is basically a bit of a documentary about veganism. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Can anyone do it?
Well, actually, I mean, so this is a semi-autobiographical element to this as well. So you've got a co-writer and director and on-screen presenter, Thomas Pickering, I believe, who basically revisits the five words that he gets asked, you know, that he hears most often when discussing his diet, which is, oh, I could never go vegan. And we've all said it, those five exact words, I could never go vegan. So he gets to the bottom of that. Could you? Really? Is there a more practical way? Would it be healthier for you if it didn't? Basically just tackles the veganism argument from, in ways that, it's not that you haven't seen it done before, it's just presented in a slightly different context here with different speakers. You've got George Monbiot, for instance, who's pushing the environmental, societal, you know, the global survivalist angle, for instance. You get doctors to talk about the physiological benefits. There are gym instructors to talk about the effects on athleticism and your actual, you know, muscle development, things like that. It's all produced as well by Alicia Silverstone, one of the most prominent vegans around. So there's a little bit of science. There's a little bit of looking at the culture of it. There's even a little bit of doomsaying. Have a listen to this documentary clip.
In meat-eating cultures around the world, people learn to classify a small handful of animals as edible.
Issues to do with the use of other animals, the use of women's bodies.
Most people have this one-dimensional view of veganism as people who eat salads all day, which is totally wrong.
Food has now overtaken other risk factors as being the biggest thing that drives chronic disease in the Western world.
Rather than getting healthier, we're actually getting sicker.
1 in 5 people die because of an unhealthy diet.
The dairy industry has convinced us that bone health is all about calcium, and calcium is all about milk.
Interesting hearing that. Would you say then, after watching it, that the argument is balanced, or is it all pro-veganism?
I mean, it is a decidedly pro-vegan documentary, but it is, you know, a sort of, you know, PR piece, really, for the veganism cause, in a strange way, in that way that it's just saying, look, we're just going to put these facts out here for you and let you decide. It's not really that preachy, despite the fact that it's got Alyssa Silverstone's name tacked on the end. It's quite engaging. So Pickering himself, you know, was raised vegan. And does call home at one point and just say, like, well, I was like, you know, just gets to the bottom of his relationship with it. So there is that sort of semi-autobiographical element going for it as well. And I'll be really honest, I find George Bombayo quite amusing. So I can listen to his doomsaying all day when he just shows up and tells you how the world is going to end unless you start eating this isn't. You know, it's just, it's kind of, I can kind of go for it. I'm a Frankie Boyle fan, so I'm used to seeing the guy. And I do read his Guardian pieces, but out of just curiosity, I will admit. Did it make me want to go vegan? Hell no. Is it an especially well-made documentary or inventive documentary? I don't really think so. I think it's quite televisual in its presentation. This is something that I think you are going to see more than likely on BBC 4 or something like that, rather than, I don't think you're going to be racing to a cinema to see this. But I could see this, you know, finding traction on streaming or on ITV or BBC 4, one of the more infotainment kind of documentary-like channels. Not a bad documentary. I don't think you'll regret the time sunk into it. There's some amusing enough personalities that you encounter along the way, and it's and there are some interesting scientific discussions had. You know, there's the old age-old argument of agriculture on the earth, in the world, and you know, how we would arguably be better off switching to a plant-based diet. Things, those old arguments do come up, and you know, it's nice to get a refresher every now and again. So, you know, science in it, but other than that, I'd take. Not really, this is not a great, you know, this is not a Asif Kapadia documentary you have to race out and catch on theatrical. So definitely hold off the stream.
I mean, I can give balance on this. I am a meat eater. I love a good steak. I love chicken. I love eggs. I love butter and milk and all of those things. But what I will say is I accidentally, a couple of months ago, bought a plant-made cake. Lemon drizzle cake, completely plant. Mm. It was the best lemon drizzle cake I have ever eaten. So there's balance for you.
I've been to every vegan bakery in London, thanks to my ex-fiancée. I don't think I could go vegan just for the fact. Do you know what? It's so much more expensive, I find.
But, there is that.
Yeah, there is that. So, yeah, so I could never go vegan. That is in cinemas from today. Thomas Pickering, directing and co-writing.
Right, let's move on to Fantastic Machine. I literally know nothing about this, so you're going to have to start at the very beginning.
Yeah, so new documentary, also known by the title and taking its truncated title from the extended one, And the King Said, What a Fantastic Machine. That old quote, I'm not sure where that originates, actually. So it's just shortened down to Fantastic Machine. New documentary from Axel Danielsson and Maximilian von Ehrich. And it is about the history, the invention of the camera and still photography and how that leads to moving photography, how that leads to, you know, sound-free motion pictures, how that leads to talkies, how that leads to CinemaScope, how that leads to IMAX, how that leads to 3D, to TikTok, to mobile phones, to the effect on human development that this one little invention has. So here's a clip. This is from the documentary The Fantastic Machine, and this is say more trailer sizzle reel stuff, but remember, this is the evolutionary story of the ability to record images.
I mean, that's what entertainment's supposed to do. It's supposed to make you forget your miserable life.
Fake news! Fake news!
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
Say cheese.
Wow. I mean, this is something I would be really keen to watch. And I just read the statistic that there are 45 billion cameras worldwide. And if I'm honest, I think most of them are on the back of my phone.
Probably that. There are some horrifying stats that you get in this. You know, like we look at a, you know, 100 million images a day as a species, and we upload, you know, X number of million photos every single day. And wow. it is horrifying. But say it takes a while to get even there, because it does go from the dawn of photography, from the original, you know, the original invention of the camera, all the way through to the first theatrical exhibition of the train pulls into the station, you know, which audiences famously ran terrified from the image of the train pulling towards the screen, which is just one of the great moments of, you know, scientific evolution. But, you know, then you get to through the talkies and into Hollywood and into epics. And the idea, for instance, of you know, theatrical exhibition, how that came about as a sort of natural byproduct of the technology, and then became almost its primary usage. And then how this gave way to, you know, the 80s and, you know, television, the focus on television, for instance, and then phones and TikTok. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. It does have that, again, I think this is something you're either going to see as part of an exhibition, as maybe a theatrical exhibition on the, you know, technology and the evolution of the camera or something like that, part of a moving arts exhibition, but certainly not a cinematic go out and, you know, pay money and buy this, you know, buy the ticket to see this on a Saturday night with a big bucket of popcorn kind of ticket. Definitely not. But say, really fascinating, and I had a whale of a time because I am I'm a nerd about the history of film, so it kind of worked for me.
Well, if you want to go and see it, Fantastic Machine is in cinemas from today. Right, still to come, The Book of Clarence. Clarence? It's Clarence, isn't
Clarence.
It?
Yeah,
I thought so. The Book of Clarence, and next we'll look at Abigail, which is also out in cinemas today. We'll see what Van thought next. Stay there. Hello and welcome back to Off Screen. Let's move swiftly on then to our next movie, which is out in cinemas from today. It is called Abigail, and well, it's kind of a horror thriller, this one, isn't it?
Yeah, yes, actually, it's a real throwback one. I'll get to it. It's the new movie from the two guys who gave us and initially broke out with Ready or Not. A few years ago, Samara Weaving, where she was the bride being hunted in the mansion. I think they're called Tyler Gillett and Matt Bettinelli-Olpin are the name of the duo. They then went on to take over, I think it was Scream 6 and 7, or 5 and 6. They took over the Scream series in two of the more recent chapters, having broken across from Ready or Not. And they're quite interesting up-and-comers on the sort of schlock studio horror scene. This reunites them with Melissa Barrera, who was the star of the Scream series at that point, and rather controversially recently was effectively fired from the role over her political views regarding Gaza. There's been a bit of an outcry about it. So this is about a group of criminals. It's set in the present day, a group of like Tarantino-esque From Dusk Till Dawn level criminals who are hired. You know, each one works anonymously. They are hired for a crew and tasked with abducting a little girl who they're going to hold for ransom from her father. They abduct the girl as they are told to. They abscond with her to a safe house, which is an isolated house in the middle of nowhere, only to discover all is not quite as it seems. Before I go further into the concept with you, though, I will play you the clip from this.
Who's the girl?
You don't need to know her name.
I don't care about her name. Whose kid is she?
A very wealthy man who's about to be $50 million poorer. Look, you're safe here. And to be completely certain that you can't be tracked, I'm going to collect your cell phones.
Nobody's tracking me.
I'm not taking any chances. Give them over.
In the bag.
One second, you just gotta send this real quick.
Thank you. Just, okay.
So, I mean, I was expecting it to be a bit more tense and some jumpies and all that. Like, please tell me there are some.
Right, so this does have a reveal that if you've seen any of the marketing, they've kind of given the game away on. But to be fair, it would be comparable to trying to market something like From Dusk Till Dawn nowadays without giving away what From Dusk Till Dawn becomes. So this obviously has then more of a straight horror movie element, more of a slasher movie element on top of it. Now, of the main crew, you've got, say, Melissa Barrera is kind of the audience POV character, the one we focus on the most. But aside from that, you've got Dan Stevens in there as well. Catherine Newton, you could hear in the clip, she from Blockers, Ant-Man's daughter in Quantumania. Now she's the kind of tech, millennial Gen Z tech kind of character that they have. Kevin Durand from The Strain is a member of the team as well. Angus Cloud, William Catlett. They're quite a fun bunch, and they are very much written in that sort of John Carpenter-like way. This is going for late 90s, early 2000s. Stephen Sommers, John Carpenter schlock. And I'm here for it. And then in the middle of it all is the young actress, Alicia Weir, who starred in the musical of Matilda recently, who stars as Abigail and gets to do really different sides of this character. It's a very fun performance. Hats off to her. I didn't even connect that she was the same actress. She's really fun in this. It's gory. It's over the top. It is very cheap and cheerful schlocky, as it's mostly set in one house again, which is kind of what they did with Ready Player One. You know how it was like, it's one like stately home. Like,
yeah.
Confined location, keeps the cost down kind of thing. You've got a lot of that, to be honest. But it still makes, just doesn't limit them from delivering a really effective, you know, quite confined and tense vampiric thriller. But let's say, expect something more akin to John Carpenter than Wes Craven with this one. But even then, adjusted for the cultural inflation of having gone through the late 90s, like Deep Rising and something like that. Definitely. I had a lot of fun with it, though. I will say there's some good moments in this.
Is it a low-budget movie then, or does it just come across that way?
I think it just comes across that way. It's quite kind of has the feel of quite a mid-budget movie. You know, in the same way that no one's looking at Ready, it looks about the same scale, for instance, as Ready or Not, to be honest. Kind of about that kind of scale. No one's looking at Ready or Not or this, I think, and thinking that cost more than, say, 25 million. Maybe 40 at a push if you adjust for certain inflation. Maybe 40 million, but no one's paying more than that for this. And it works for something. If you're a fan of kind of, because I've really gone away from having like self-confined one-off studio chillers. Like, I don't feel like we're going to get Abigail 2. Like, I don't feel like this has been envisioned for Abigail 2 in the same. But then again, you know, I don't think Orphan, which was a comparable kind of thing, I don't think Orphan was planned with Orphan Part 2 in mind either. And that's, to be fair, at least some goofy fun. I like this, though, and at least it's got, you know, a good old-fashioned, you know, video store-friendly tone and aesthetic to it. It's not afraid to be drenched in gore either. It's definitely earned hard 18, I will say as well. Have you got the trailer playing in the background? You see just the amount of gore that's...
Yeah. There is a bit of gore. I wouldn't say I've seen loads of gore, though, to be fair. No. But then it depends what they put in the trailer. But it does look very... It looks quite dark and dingy.
Yeah, it is. It's all about atmosphere. But I really like about the Alicia Weir performance as well. There's something kind of in that way that we had with Megan last year, for instance, there's sort of an instantly iconic element to her in that there's the ballerina shtick.
Because yeah.
She's a little girl who is a ballerina. She's in the outfit. And you can see on the poster, I think, they advertise it with her and the little ballerina tutu wrapped around the screen. there's an element with that makes her extra creepy. Like, really?
I just saw some of that gore you were talking about while she's wearing the ballerina dress. Yeah, I get you. It's carrying on. Yeah, I mean, I would probably enjoy that. The thing that I really love about horrors and thrillers is if they make you jump.
I mean, my thing with this as well was I just had a lot of fun with the John Carpenter-like band of mercs in this. Like, they were quite a good combination of personalities. Like, Kevin Durand goes for kind of the dumb, funny kind of Jane from Firefly, you know, Adam Baldwin, kind of the Drax kind of character of the bunch. You've got Newton as the tech geek, Dan Stevens as the sort of charming kind of more professional leader of the group, and then you've got Melissa Barrera, who's going for that sort of sassy, say, John Carpenter-like lead as the sort of, you know, rogue of the team. The interplay between them all is very fun, and the way they have to deal with Abigail, you know, Abigail herself, works quite well. But they were, I think, my favourite element of it, even more so than the tone and Abigail herself, who I don't think is quite up to Megan levels, but is kind of like instantly memorable and kind of iconic in her own right, on a low level.
These horror movie names are going to stop any Megans and Abigails being born in the future because no parent is going to want to name their child after these.
I know.
Brilliant. Well, if you want to watch it, you can, because Abigail is out in cinemas from today. And as Van said, it's an 18. Right, final movie of the show coming up, The Book of Clarence, in just a second. We'll see what Van thinks of that one. Stay there. Hello and welcome back to Off Screen for one last ride. Then we are going to look at the Book of Clarence. So the trailer for this, the cinematography looks beautiful in this.
Yes, as well it should, for reasons we will get to, sir, for reasons we will absolutely get to. So have you sussed what the film is? Because I know you watch the trailers without in the background without sound. So I'm curious, can you tell what the movie is yet?
No, I can't really. It's just a lot of hot, sunshiny places and sort of Egyptian tunnels and that kind of stuff, hieroglyphics.
So think of this as a nearly all black cast or primarily black cast version of Monty Python's Life of Brian. Okay, so it follows, in ancient Jerusalem, follows a young man named Clarence, who's a sort of down-on-his-luck gambler. Basically, he's a weed dealer around Jerusalem, and he's played by Lakeith Stanfield. And he owes a lot of money to a local gangster type because he lost it in a chariot race that went wrong. And he sees a potential way to get rich by riding the coattails of Jesus Christ, by basically becoming the 13th apostle and therefore becoming privy to all of the donations that Jesus gets given all the time, because Jesus is a real guy around this point. He is then put through a series of trials to become the 13th apostle, and along the way sets his sights on something higher, becoming a rival messiah to Jesus Christ himself. But before all of that, I've got a clip for you of Clarence, Lakeith Stanfield, early on with his mum.
Mother, might linger on weed.
It helps with the glaucoma. Better wash before you go see her. I'm just trying to make sure you don't die a virgin, son.
Oh, wow. I'm not a virgin.
What you do at night behind that curtain doesn't count.
That is not me. That's the local rats.
The very loud rats.
Okay.
I just saw a bit of the trailer as well, where he was attempting to walk on water. So, I mean, this really does, like, take it to the extreme.
It really does. And I'm shocked that this hasn't been a bigger deal, this movie, because the ambition behind it is really admirable, because it doesn't look like a cheap movie. Like they've really gone all out with the setting, with the cinematography of it. Now, this is brought to us by writer-director James Samuel, who has worked with Jay-Z a bunch, has worked in fashion and music videos, things like that, and also directed The Harder They Fall for Netflix a couple of years ago. You've also got cinematography from Rob Hardy in there as well. Rob Hardy is like cinematography royalty at this point, and worked recently on Civil War with Alex Garland. He's kind of one of Alex Garland's go-to guys. I think he worked on Annihilation as well. So it really looks the part as well. And Lakeith Stanfield is always... I think we undervalue how fun Lakeith Stanfield can be. I'm kind of in on that shtick. He delivers this really well. And if I have a complaint about it, I think it's over long, because it goes on. It's 2 hours and 9 minutes long. And because it's trying to evoke the feeling throughout of an old-fashioned biblical epic, it feels kind of a little bit too drawn out in accordance with that as well. So I feel like you could have clipped 20 minutes to almost half an hour off of this and just sped it up a little bit. But for that time you do get there, at least you're getting some sort of chuckle, some world building. There's always an aside or something going on, or an emotion to read. I rather like as well some of the supporting cast. In particular, there's a great cameo from James McAvoy as Pontius Pilate, for instance, who you might have seen trying to walk across water. Yeah, and McAvoy is really playing it like as a proper, just broad character. You got Benedict Cumberbatch is in there as well for a minute. But my personal favorite was Omar Sy as Barabbas. Barabbas the Immortal, I think he goes by, who just simply can't be killed unless you stab him in a certain heel, like Achilles. And he's quite fun. I really like Omar Sy. I was a big fan of him going back to Intouchable or The Untouchable, whatever it was from 5 or 6 years ago. And I've kind of loved the guy ever since, whenever he turns up in something, particularly something like Hollywoodized. And this definitely falls into that that bracket. But I really liked him in this. And I say, it's just a fun movie to check out entirely, this one. But it's just overlong. So it kind of fits into, this is definitely one to see on a Sunday afternoon. And do go into it thinking, I feel like I'm getting the sort of hip-hop take on Life of Brian, for lack of a better term. Because even with... They have, like, classical biblical music that has been stylized to a hip-hop sort of a rhythm, and going with that vibe. And it works really well. And the way in which they have Lakeith, like, kind of strut into each town and village is really well done. RJ Seiler. It's nice to see RJ Seiler in a decent scale role again as well. He's most recent, I think, known to most people for the Power Rangers movie a few years ago, the gritty reboot the Power Rangers movie.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I think he was Billy in that, and I think also Me and Earl and the Dying Girl. But he's in this as Clarence's sort of best mate slash cousin. Fun movie, but overlong, I will say. And I think its ambition overreaches its welcome, let's say. If you know what I mean, in that way. But I did like it very slick, and certainly looked the part.
Yeah, I would agree on that. Obviously, I've not seen the movie, but I've seen the trailer, and I absolutely agree. I think that it looks like there's been millions thrown at this. Not always the sign of a good movie, but it helps. So, The Book of Clarence, out in cinemas from today. If you want to check it out yourself, I've got to ask you, as I always do at the end, what your movie of the week is. My guess will be The Book of Clarence, but you might surprise me.
I think, to be honest, I would say Book of Clarence because it was something really amusing and different. But you know what? Abigail is a perfectly fun 3-star throwback. And I think if you're just looking for a good time at the movies this weekend, like, go and see that. And if you're the kind of person that likes Deep Rising or 13 Ghosts or that kind of movie, you know, just a schlock throwaway, 100-minute kind of supernatural thing that's, you know, competently studio made, definitely check out Abigail. But I think if you want something quirky and different, or something like a really good chill Sunday afternoon, Book of Clarence, you'll have some laughs, and it's something quite unique and almost Coen Brothers-y at times as well.
Right, well, there you go. That could be your weekend sorted. Plenty of movies to choose from there that are out from today. Let's take a brief look at next week, what we've got to come. There's Still Tomorrow. That sounds like a James Bond title, doesn't it?
Doesn't it? A proper nice James Bond in. Ian Fleming's James Bond in. There's Still Tomorrow. No tomorrow, won't it, with Bond or something like that. But, you know, this is an Italian movie. My producer at Talk TV, my favourite producer, Gabriella Incalza, who's sort of my go-to every time I work with Petri over there. She recommended this to me. Being an Italian lady, she got to see an early screening of this, and she got really enthusiastic with me. I'm like, wow, okay, you've sold this to me so hard that I feel obligated I have to see this. So I'm really looking forward to seeing There's Still Tomorrow next week. We've got the animated, I think it's an Australian animated movie, Scary Girl. One word with
Scary Girl. All right.
Yeah. I know it's got Sam Neill's voice talents in there as well. We've got the supernatural African American adventure movie, The American Society of Magical Negroes, next week to look forward to as well. I think that's basically looks like a sort of Harry Potter with a largely black cast kind of setup. One that I'm really looking forward to next week is Boy Kills World with Bill Skarsgård, in which it's basically John Wick with a deaf guy who hears the voice of H. John Benjamin. I cannot wait. I am so excited.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, absolutely dying to see this. This is going to be great, I hope. Ordinary Angels, which is a faith-based movie starring, I think it's Hilary Swank, which is okay, and then Alan Ritchson, aka Reacher, and I think it's about like the community rallying around this like widower guy who's trying to save his dying child. Like I say, faith-based movie, so get hankies at the ready for that one. I make one of these that didn't star like, you know, Jim Caviezel. And last but certainly by no means least is Zendaya, heating up the tennis court next week in challengers alongside Josh O'Connor and Mike Faust. So Luca Guadagnino's challenges, which I have seen, and it's filthy, is next week. Look forward to that.
Well, yeah, plenty of movies to look forward to hearing about next week. Well, that is, of course, all we've got time for this week on Off Screen. We will be back next week. Until then, I've been Adam Ball.
I've been Van Connor, and we shall return.